Today, England and Scotland players will take the knee this evening before their Euro 2020 match. But why has this anti-racist act generated so much controversy? There are moments in every major international football tournament that find a way to lodge themselves in the collective memory. With England, it is often very emotional.
Some people are on the pitch, they think it's all over.
There's occasional joy.
It is now. It's four.
Despair.
And Maradona gives Argentina the lead. The England players protesting to the referee.
Tears.
Has actually Gascoigne got a yellow card now? Oh dear. Oh dear me. He's going to be out of the final if England get there. And here is a moment that almost brings tears to his eyes.
Hope. More despair.
And that is it. Fantastic win for Iceland. They deny England everything, but England were shocking, and this will go down as the worst or amongst the worst result in the history of English international football.
No idea, no excuses. England players should be ashamed of themselves.
And then...
decent looking ball for Phillips. Got past one, then two, then plays it into Sterling!
Hope again. As this England team, perhaps the most talented in a generation, start well in their bid to win the Euros.
England in! Raheem Sterling's first major tournament goal!
But their participation in this tournament will not just be remembered for the football. It will also be remembered for them taking a stand against racism, even in the face of opposition. The players' decision to take the knee has been booed by some of their own fans and has even been criticised by senior cabinet ministers. But they are pushing ahead, and in solidarity, Scotland's players will do the same when these age-old rivals meet at Wembley tonight. From The Guardian, I'm Anoushka Astana. Today in Focus... why England's players are so determined to keep taking the knee. Liam Rossini, you've played in the Premiership for a number of clubs. You've represented England in the under-21s. You're now assistant manager at Championship Club Derby County. Professional football has always been a central part of your life, hasn't it? Did you see racism in the sport as a child?
I come from two generations of professional footballers. So my dad was a professional player, played for West Ham. And my dad faced overt racial incidents probably weekly. Playing in front of thousands of people. He's a young boy, when you see your dad get bananas thrown at him or called names and they don't, and fans speaking about your dad, they don't know that he's your dad and you're 4, 5, 6 years old. It stays with you. And that's something that's, it's not right, it's not correct. But at the same time, I'm kind of thankful for that experience because it gives you strength and it gives you a determination to make things change in the future. It made my dad want to keep pushing forward. And I've got so much gratitude to the previous generations of black players who've pushed the game forward. Huge role models in the game, like my dad, John Barnes, Chris Hughton, Cyril Regis, Clyde Best.
Hurst back to Clyde Best, a hit one and a goal! Clyde Best really clouted that ball.
And it was so inspiring to me to see people who look like me being able to do what they love to do.
And what about once you became professional? Did you experience incidents?
I did. I remember being called the N-word on the pitch on numerous occasions.
Numerous occasions?
Yeah, within earshot of the referee. I asked the referee to do something about it, and he didn't. So I then got sent off for a really reckless tackle on the player that kept calling me racist names. So that was while I was 17 years old, and that one really upset me because I needed help. I was a young player in our own country, asking for help. The help wasn't forthcoming, and I reacted in a way that I'm not proud of, but at the same time is understandable. And the second occasion that comes to mind was actually representing England under 21s in the Euro tournament in Holland. We played against Serbia, constant monkey chants.
What do you feel like when you're warming up and people are doing monkey chants at you?
It's really difficult to explain the feeling when you're racially abused, because you're being abused about something that you should be proud of. My mum is an English white woman from South London, working class. My dad is West African, with West African Sierra Leone roots. I'm proud of both those cultures, and all of us, wherever we come from, we should be proud of where we come from. I want to represent where we come from in the most positive way possible. Now, what racism does, it gives people a tool with which to make people feel inferior because of where they come from, to make them not feel proud and not feel empowered to be the best that they can be in life. And that's why racism in so many different aspects needs to be stamped out.
And when you were a kid and this was happening, was there any way for you as a black player to take a stand?
I think it was a different time. I think so I think we got to a point in life where we just accepted racism. We said, it happens, it's the way life is, nothing's really going to change. Now I think we've got to a point in our society where we're saying, no, things do need to change.
Paul McInnes, you write about football for The Guardian. The act of taking the knee as a form of protest against racism comes from the sporting world, doesn't it? Tell me where it began.
Well, it began in 2016 in a hot pre-season match between the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers, two NFL sides. And it didn't start with taking the knee. A photo emerged of Colin Kaepernick, a black NFL player, a quarterback, at the back of the group of players and coaches, sitting while the national anthem was being played. And it wasn't really commented on. But then Kaepernick did it again, and people did pick up on it. And by the time he did it a third time in the pre-season, he was asked about it.
What would you like this, you know, to be the end game for you?
I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for. And that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for: freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now.
And he said that it was to protest against specifically police brutality and more broadly against the ongoing oppression of people of colour in the United States.
There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards.
And this followed deaths in August 2016 of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, two young black men whose deaths sparked protests.
This is black pain. This is black pain. These aren't black people out here mad protesting. These are black people out here mad because we're tired of our children being murdered in the streets.
And quite tellingly, he said, I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of colour.
Continue to sit?
Yes, I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
As we all know, the gesture was changed. After a conversation with a former Green Beret, Kaepernick decided that taking a knee would be more respectful. And so that's what he did. Tell me what the response was.
The protest quickly became a sensation. It took off across the NFL and across American sports.
Overnight, a wave of NFL members joining Colin Kaepernick's protest against racism and police brutality. Coast to coast, players supporting the movement. Entire teams making the unified decision to stand, but linking arms in solidarity during the national anthem.
Oh, say can you see?
On the Seattle sideline, it wasn't just players, but coaches, employees, even fans following suit.
Hopefully it's going to unify our country to where there's a message that needs to be heard. And so you heard us, now listen to us.
But it did not go down well with everybody. In fact, it hit right along the fault line of American politics at that time. And Kaepernick was booed in the stadium. He received abuse during games. And he also quickly became a lightning rod for debate in the country at large through the media and also through politics. By the time Donald Trump took power, it was a real divisive issue, which, of course, the president then ploughed into.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
What happened to Colin Kaepernick?
Basically, he never played American football again. He was, by the end of that season, the 2016-17 season, he was let go by the 49ers. And he hasn't had a contract for any team since. And this, despite American sports are very data-led, very analytical, this is despite the fact that the data shows that he would be an effective starting quarterback for many teams in the league. And it was Kaepernick's contention from the very start that he had been effectively blacklisted by the league because of his stance.
So Kaepernick paid a really heavy personal price for that decision to protest. But what did it mean for this anti-racist gesture that he had introduced to the world?
Not only was it something that resonated through America, it was used by American people outside of sports. And with the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, following the death of George Floyd, many more people started taking the knee during protests. And that round of Black Lives Matter protests, I don't think it really needs saying, you know, became a real transformative moment in the nature of the debate around race. It brought it to the forefront, and one of the most important things in society.
Bring forth your humanity, it's your weapon. And the biggest weapon in the world today is the power of love.
Love is your colour today. Yeah? You are not black, you are not white, you are the colour of
Those protests obviously spread across the world through the spring and then summer of 2020. In England, football had resumed, but without crowds. How did players begin to take the knee?
Well, they ended up taking the knee under their own volition. I think, like many people, they were moved by the protests and felt that it was a time for action. And so when the season began after that summer, Premier League players, before kickoff, as they gather around the centre circle, waiting for the game to start.
Who kick off? But before he does, look at this. A powerful image to show football's social conscience as all of the players take the knee. The referee did as well.
Those players taking the knee wasn't happening in a vacuum. Obviously, football has always had problems with racism, but there have been some really worrying trends in recent years. In 2019, English players playing Bulgaria away were subjected to monkey chants. They nearly walked off the pitch.
We had a conversation about it at halftime. Did we want to play on? Did we want to stop? But we made a collective decision to continue the game. We thought it was important that we'd heard it, that the protocols had been followed, and if it happened again, we would have then perhaps moved on to the next step and come off the pitch.
And afterwards, there was a lot of angst about racism in Europe. But it's become very clear that this isn't just a problem overseas. English football has actually done very well at reducing incidents within the stands. But in the past year, we've seen black English players face disgusting racism online through social media.
Rashford's got a chance here and has missed it. What an opportunity.
The look on Marcus Rashford's face said it all. Clearly angry with himself during Manchester United's Europa League final defeat, but then outraged by online abuse. Tweeting that he'd received at least 70 racial slurs on social media and that a mountain of monkey emojis had been sent to him by a maths teacher with an open profile, seemingly free to abuse without consequence.
As the lockdown eased, we had fans returning to stadiums. Tell me what happened when they did.
There were pilot matches last autumn, early winter, to test the feasibility of letting fans back into ground. It didn't last because of the second wave of the pandemic. But at two games, Millwall and at Colchester, fans booed the taking of the knee. I think this caught a lot of people by surprise.
That was probably the most high-profile one. We played Millwall away, and we took the knee, and the players were honestly shocked because it wasn't just the booing; it was so strong in the stadium. You know, it was so loud. I was shocked. I was on the side of the pitch, and it really affected our players because they didn't expect it. And the reason the players didn't expect it is because there's no thought from those players of anything political. They were just trying to kneel for equality of all races. So to be booed in that way at the Den was something I'll never forget. But it was a positive thing because it brought it back to our attention that things haven't improved to the point that we want it to improve.
Were you actually taking the knee as well?
Yeah, I was. I was on the side of the pitch. And honestly, it's really difficult as a coach or assistant manager because I knew how much it was affecting our black players and their performance. In the game, a couple of our players were so affected. They weren't thinking straight. They weren't making decisions. And I've been there. You know, I spoke to you before about you know, what happened to me when I was 17 and I got sent off or playing for England under 21s. When you're racially abused, or you feel like you're being disrespected because of your race, it's one of the most hurtful things you can imagine. So what I was trying to do at that time was try to be there and have empathy for the players on the pitch and help them get through what was a really, really difficult day.
God.
At that point, people had started arguing that what taking the knee was doing was showing solidarity with, inverted commas, Black Lives Matter, which was interpreted by some people to be an organisation rather than an association, a movement of people calling for racial equality. It was an organisation, a political party almost, which in some instances interpreted by some as being a Marxist organisation. And the FA was saying, no, this is not what this gesture is.
And on that, I've heard that argument. I was listening just this week to Nigel Farage make that argument that people are booing a political statement, they're booing a Marxist organisation.
You cannot separate taking the knee from the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm. It is an avowedly, openly Marxist organisation that wants to defund the police and wants to bring down the whole of Western civilisation.
Do you really think that the people in the stands in Millwall and in Colchester were doing it because they were worried about the political statement that the players were making?
I don't know. I didn't at the time. And I think part of the nature of this debate is it became about, well, you can't prove that. You can't say they're not. So it became difficult. And you're also invited to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I think that's what the FA did then. They said, OK, that's what people are saying. We won't punish now, but this is what it is. So going forward, understand that this is what it is. But yet, 6 months later, fans start coming back into the grounds again towards the end of the football season and the booing starts again. So we get to the point where the nadir, I think, is when we come to the end of the club season, we start getting ready for Euro 2020, the first major international tournament on home soil since Euro 96, a tournament that is in the collective memory now, something close to nirvana, this coming together, this wonderful, joyous period. And in the warm-up matches before the tournament that England are playing, getting out amongst the fans in the country, they take the knee and they're booed. And they're booed vociferously.
Tell me how the England team and others responded to those boos.
They were very clear. This is what we're doing. We are showing solidarity and we are making an anti-racist gesture. For one last time, it's not associated to anything beyond that act. What we want is to see equality for everyone. This is where Bulgaria becomes relevant again, because this was Tyrone Mings, a black player, plays for Aston Villa, came up the hard way, a late bloomer in his career, has had several injuries as well. He pointed out the monkey noises. There's a clip of him in Bulgaria saying to an official, "Do you hear this? Do you hear this?" He became the sort of the figure of England being abused. Now he's getting it again, but by his own fans. But what you heard in the sort of English response, they were very clear. This is what we're doing. And that was backed up by the manager, Gareth Southgate, who had been confronted about whether the act was divisive and said he'd put it back to the players and that it would be up to them. But I think anybody who knew Gareth Southgate knew that what the response to that would be. And it was a very firm decision to continue and to continue throughout the entirety of Euro 2020.
We feel that more than ever, determined to take the knee through this tournament, we accept that there might be an adverse reaction, and we're just going to ignore that and move forward. I think the players are sick of talking about the consequences of should they, shouldn't they. They've had enough, really.
Do you know Gareth Southgate?
I have met him on a number of occasions.
Is he as lovely as he seems?
He absolutely is, yeah. Oh. And the thing about Gareth Southgate is he is an intelligent man, he's a compassionate man, he's a well-rounded man, but one of the reasons that he's so well-rounded is because he has failed in his life, you know? He took the decisive penalty at Euro 96, that tournament where we were supposed to bring football home, and he missed it.
Saved it!
And it was a duff penalty.
Oh, my word. Oh, sorry for Southgate, but he'll learn from this experience. He's had a great tournament. So that's how it stands. England go out, Germany go through to meet the Czech Republic.
And he cemented that position by appearing in a Pizza Hut commercial with a paper bag over his head. Somebody whose managerial career looked to have been ruined within 2 years of it starting because he failed. And then he worked himself back and he used that failure to learn and to have humility. He's strong. He knows what he thinks and believes, but he is, yeah, he's humble, he's gracious. He listens to other people.
So, Paul, the sun was shining on Sunday. Everyone was really excited about the match. You had 22,500 at Wembley, but millions in pubs and homes across the country.
The countdown to kickoff is on in glorious Wembley sunshine.
And it, of course, began with the England team taking the knee. At which point, there were boos, weren't there?
As England's players take the knee.
Let's say what definitely happened. People booed. People cheered. People applauded. The cheering and the applause got louder and louder. It drowned out the boos, and the boos stopped before the end of the taking of the knee. That's what happened. How many boos were there? It's difficult to quantify. England start out
here at Wembley Stadium. Liam, where were you watching the game?
I was at home. I like to sit back at home and concentrate. I was watching it with my children. And yeah, it does make me feel sick to hear people booing the knee. And my daughters are sat there watching the game.
How old are they?
My daughters are 13, 11 and 10.
Did you talk to them about it?
Yeah, I've spoken to them about it for years now. And so there's an awareness there of why things are the way they are. It was really horrible experience for us to watch the booing of the knee with my daughters. But I think, again, it's a really positive thing because they understand that things need to be changed.
Do you think booing players taking the knee is a racist act?
I think if you understand that the reason that our players proudly representing the England shirt and kneeling for equality, and you're aware of that and you still boo, then that's a racist act. It's as simple as that. When people misconstrue what the knee is about and they say it's about Marxism or they say it's about political ideology, that's just an excuse to boo something where deep down, if someone's standing up or making a gesture for the good of society, how can equality not be a good thing for the world we live in? And if you still boo that, then yes, for me, it is a racist act. It's as simple as that. And for our government, key people in government who've misrepresented and changed the what it's about. And I think that's just wrong. I think for years now, we're living in a world of divisive politics, of identity politics, whether that's immigration, whether it's race, whether it's class, and people using the knee to politicize that and speak about it in a different way from what it is, I think is criminal. And those people really, you know, and we know who they are. I can name names. Priti Patel, her comments over the last couple of days make me feel sick.
I just don't support, you know, people participating in, you know, that type of gesture politics to a certain extent as well.
So the England fans are right to boo?
Well, that's a choice for them, quite frankly.
Would you be booing,
well,
if you're in the stands?
I've not gone to a football match to even sort of, you know, contemplate that. But I maintain my point, quite frankly, that we learn from our past, we don't try and rewrite it.
And as someone who's in the highest powers of government, who, by the way, who should have awareness of what it's like to be perceived in a certain way because you're, as British as you are perceived to be different because of the colour of your skin. For her to come out and to say she understands why people are booing the knee is nothing short of sickening, and it sets our society back years and years and years. And I think these people should be made accountable for their comments. You know, they're fueling a gender identity politics and fueling people who, by the way, we know the reasons why a lot of people are booing the knee. It's got nothing to do with Marxism. It's to do with an identity. It's to do with a hatred for a different background or ethnicity. But let's be real, that's what it's about. And people are hiding behind this at the moment. And for people in our government to fuel that, for Boris Johnson not to condemn it, you know, it's unacceptable.
I've seen some polls on all of this since the match, and there is some good news. More people support the players taking the knee than oppose it. But there are a significant number, many of whom I imagine would never boo themselves, who still don't like the idea of this gesture. It makes them feel uncomfortable. Why do you think that is?
I think a lack of education. It's a wonderful country we live in, with great cultural diversity, with an unbelievable history. But at the same time, there are parts of our history that we need to go back and confront. The huge elephant in the room for me. So I'm from Sierra Leone. The capital of Sierra Leone is Freetown. The reason it's called Freetown is because of the slave trade. That's a huge part of our history. So for people who don't understand that, how can you expect people to have an empathy and understanding of race and what it means to be Black or Asian or come from different parts of the world and represent this country now? I can't expect people to understand things that they're not taught about or not aware of. And I think that's one of the biggest tools of division is actually a lack of education and a lack of tolerance for things that people have no concept or understanding of.
As disappointing as it was that there were boos, there were very quickly cheers, lots of cheers, that drowned out any negativity. What did that mean to you?
90% of people in this country, a good 95%, the high percent of people in this country want to stand for what's right and want to stand for what's good. But until we, it doesn't affect me as much hearing boos or hearing cheers. Covert racism or unconscious bias or whatever, or prejudice, whatever you want to call it, that's the issue that we really, really need to address. You're always going to have a small minority of people with negative things to say. That's always going to be there. But actually, we need to change our people's lives and culture and job prospects and how they're perceived on the streets. And young Black children in central London, you know, in poor, deprived areas, are they getting the education that they deserve? Are they being perceived in a way that they should be? Are they not getting stopped and searched on the streets? These are much more important issues and all things that are wider than just football. So whether the England players taking the knee are booed or whether they're cheered, that's almost secondary to the major issues. Is for me, every single person in this country, whether they're white, black, gay, lesbian, it doesn't matter. They're seen as people and they're treated in a humane and equal way.
You talk about overt and covert racism, and I guess that we can see that over the decades in football. The scenes you described at the start with your dad and also in your early days are often not seen these days, but racism isn't always in your face like that. It can be discreet, it can be institutionalised, and it can still be incredibly pervasive. Obviously, you're talking about society in general, but isn't this true in football as well? I mean, you're one of not that many black people in the management side of the game, and the same is true in the hierarchy of governing bodies. Is that part of the problem?
I think it is. I think it's how you perceive that. I think we've come from, again, if you look at the history of not just football, of race in our country, of race throughout the world, this is a long-term issue that's going to take a long-term issues take a long time to be solved. All I'm trying to do in this generation is to move things forward for the next generation. Having a diversity of thought at the highest structures of not just football, but any industry, creates a diversity in thinking, creates empathy and trust between workers, employees and employers. And that's why I'm doing the job that I do now. I want to be really successful as a black coach. I'm proud to be black. I'm proud to be white. My mum is white. I just want to represent myself in the best way possible to move things forward. And that's hopefully something I'll be successful in doing.
I have to say, as a person of colour, I find watching the England players take the knee in the face of the abuse that they faced is one of the most incredible things and moving things you can see. Such a huge statement.
If I was an England player now, it would make me even more proud to take the knee. And actually, what delighted me in England's last footballing performance, the first 20 minutes they played was probably the best football I've ever seen an England team play. If you watch the first 20 minutes back of that game, some of the football, the expression, the passion that they play with, the intensity was outstanding. And I think that comes from, again, they know they're representing something huge. And they know they have a huge part to play as role models, as be yes, winning games and but playing the game in the right way with the right spirit. And I think that drove them actually to their performance because they know they're standing for something bigger than themselves. And I'm really, really excited and really, really proud to watch this England team represent us at the moment. The people who've moved society forward have always faced opposition. You know, that's where all people we speak about now, Nelson Mandela. You know, he didn't have it easy, but he wanted things to be better for people and moving forward. And I think when you do that and you stand up to things, it's even more inspiring. So it's actually more inspiring to me to see that England players and Gareth Southgate stand up for what he believes is right in the face of provocation, in the face of boost. I think that's even better than people just all agreeing and clapping and getting on with it, because that's not where we are as a society.
Coming up, what does all of this mean for the football? Paul, what has all this meant for the football itself? What has it meant for the tournament?
That's a really interesting question. I think what it meant was that England against Croatia on Sunday at Wembley were able to start the game confidently, and they went off at a real lick. They nearly scored the opening goal in the first 2 minutes. It fizzled away after a while, but it was exciting. And then they played a controlled, mature style of football to ultimately win the game. I think in the short term, it allows for the prospect of England building up momentum in the tournament. Now, my colleague Jonathan Liu wrote a very powerful piece for The Guardian at the weekend talking about lots of things around England and identity, and talked about how the sort of the unifying effect of the England team is often illusory or at least short-lived. But I don't think that means that the England team aren't trying to do that. I think they do want to say to people, look, this is what we're about, and look how you feel if we get things right. And I think what happened on Sunday in the sort of the way in which the booing, it was there but it fizzled out, has allowed the potential for that story to happen. We'll see It'll only take one missed penalty and the story could change.
I've got a really good feeling about this tournament. I think this tournament, what really gave me a real positive feeling was again, the leadership of Gareth Southgate, because it would have been easy for him to take the easy route and to stop the players taking the knee. But I think hopefully, thinking positively, I think England have a great chance of being really successful whether they win a tournament or not. But I think in years to come, we'll look back on this England team and be proud of them for what they stood for and hopefully making a real change in moving things forward and bringing people together again.
And hopefully in the game itself, although we'd never get too excited.
No, I think that's the beauty of football. What's the point if you can't get excited? We've got a great chance. That's the beauty of football. I'm really excited. We've got so many talented young players and they're playing some wonderful football at the moment and I really hope it continues.
Liam Rossini, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
That was Liam Rossini and Paul McInnes. Do follow all our reporting on this tournament at theguardian.com. And if you're not already doing it, then start listening to The Guardian's Football Weekly podcast right now, because obviously it's brilliant and it has gone daily for the Euros. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Josh Kelly and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cucoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Archie Bland. I hope you enjoy the match tonight, if you're watching. And either way, I hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.